Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sange, your host for the weekend. And joining us today is a good friend of the station's, a good friend, obviously, of all of the El Paso community, Dr. Tom Fullerton. Dr. Fullerton is with the College of Economics. He is a professor of economics and finance, and he's here to tell us a little bit about what we're going to talk a little bit about, how COVID-19 has affected not just the economy here in the El Paso area, but perhaps nationwide and maybe even worldwide as well. Dr. Fullerton, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Good afternoon, Louis. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Tell us, first of all, as we all know, has it been shortly after spring break, right, that COVID-19 that we were asked to shelter in? So it's been a little over 2 months.
That's correct. It was actually a week before, spring break, I think, when a bad metaphysical place broke out all over. And people started to have to shelter in place, and students had to come home from universities all over the country. And, it has been an economic event the likes of which have not been observed in more than a century. The last time we had a widespread pandemic like this was the Spanish flu outbreak of 1918. And so this is literally uncharted territory because they didn't keep as many economic charts back in 1918 as we do now.
Now, at first, when I remember President Wilson announcing that the students were not to come back, they were going to be extended another week. That was actually on Friday the 13th, March 13th. But people thought, well, this is only going to be a couple weeks and then everything's going to be back to normal.
That's true, and that was based upon pronouncements out of the White House. At first, the president was very dismissive of it, and when he said it was a hoax, most people believed him. A few people were worried about it, but when the president of the country dismisses something like this, that carries a lot of weight. That bully pulpit really works, and so most people thought, well, maybe if it's not a hoax, it can't be all that serious. As a consequence of that, it really caught people by surprise. Although, the media immediately started contacting more and more healthcare experts. And the healthcare experts, slowly were warning everybody, hey, this is more serious than what you are being led to believe. And it turns out that the healthcare professionals, the biologists as well as the virologists, they were all correct.
Interesting that you mentioned about what the president, the way he reacted at the beginning, because in talking to one of a former colleague of ours who is a political scientist, he talked a little bit about President Wilson, not our President Wilson, but President Woodrow Wilson from the 1918, and how he was dismissing a little bit of the Spanish flu because he didn't want people to be thinking about that. He wanted them to be thinking about the war, the Great War instead.
That's correct. And to a large extent, people didn't really think that much about the Spanish flu pandemic. Now, I think it's worthwhile to point out that back then, medicine did not have the tools that it has now. And so that one, caught a lot of people by surprise, and there probably wasn't as much evidence available to the White House then, to raise the warning. But, people really were focused on World War I at that point.
Tell us a little bit about when this pandemic first was announced, people were going out to the stores and let's call it what it is, hoarding. And for some reason, it was the hand sanitizer and the toilet tissue that was being hoarded more than any other supplies or food.
Well, that was a reaction that people thought, if I'm going to be locked down in my house for a long time, what do I really need? And they stocked up on those items. And the hand sanitizer was because early on, once people realized that, no, this was in fact a serious health issue, one of the things that was emphasized was that, when people wash their hands with soap, that soap can break down the membranes of those coronavirus cells. And they said also that the hand sanitizer, even if it wasn't as effective as soap, at least it was fairly effective. And so, boy, that just created instant demand for it. And it was to the extent that a lot of companies that manufacture spirits, liquors, they switched from manufacturing items that can be consumed to manufacturing hand sanitizers. And the response was fairly rapid, and it was impressive. But yeah, the runs on the supermarkets were reminiscent of what happens whenever there's a large scale hurricane or earthquake or tornado, something of that nature. Only this one was spread out over the whole country, if not the whole hemisphere.
We are visiting with Professor Tom Fullerton. Dr. Fullerton is a professor of finance and economics here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Tom, tell us a little bit about, you and some of your colleagues have been looking around at checking the borderplex, the economy, everything around the New Mexico, El Paso, Juarez area. And as we mentioned at the beginning of the program, right after spring break is when this shelter in place was put in. And that affected Easter weekend. And Easter weekend, as we know, a lot of people from Mexico come over here. And tell us a little bit about how those numbers affected us.
Well, normally Easter weekend is a weekend where there is an enormous amount of commercial activity here in El Paso. It was dealt, a two-fisted blow during the pandemic because, one, visitors from Mexico could not come to El Paso. And, when tourists arrived from Mexico, a lot of tourists go to museums and things, but the tourists that arrive from Mexico tend to go to the shopping malls and the restaurants, things like that. So that really impacted on the commercial sales totals, not only in El Paso, but all the way from Brownsville, west Arizona and San Diego. Entire border, lost a big source of revenues from Easter weekend due to the border closures. And then the other thing was that, all of the things that families normally engage in, all of a sudden they didn't. And, that lowered expenditures as well. And so the first inkling of how severe the commercial impacts were going to be really emerged in a pronounced manner during Easter weekend. And the border regions of the United States, observed that impact to an even more extensive, in a more extensive manner than other regions of the country did.
And did it affect it both ways? It's people from the U.S. going into Mexico as well, spending money?
Yes, it did, because there are a lot of people that take advantage of, the Easter weekend to head south and visit family also. It was a more muted effect than what was, that associated with people coming north, because Holy Week in Mexico is, they combine it with spring break, so it's a two-week holiday. And so they have a lot more travel flexibility than people here in the United States, where typically it's essentially a three-day weekend.
You send us the Borderplex magazine that you deliver, and it's available at the library, and we're going to post that link on our website. But let's go back to another holiday, which we really recently had, and that's Memorial Day, and the travel really significantly dropped as well.
That's true. Nationwide, it's estimated that Memorial Day air travel declined by approximately 90%. They haven't finalized the numbers yet, but it appears that estimate is going to be accurate. In terms of overall travel, which includes automobile travel and other forms of travel, the effect was more muted, but still, expenditures dropped by more than 70%, 65 to 70%. And so, that was billions of dollars of expenditures that normally take place every year during Memorial Day weekend, which is the traditional kickoff to the summer vacation season, and those sales just didn't materialize.
Now, the price of gas, as we've seen, has come down significantly, but some people are saying, well, what's the point of that if we can't go anywhere?
That's true. The price of gasoline has declined, and what the reaction of consumers, the less than favorable reaction of consumers reflects something. When gasoline prices decline because of supply increases, that's a good thing, especially in a geographically fractured economy like El Paso, because cost of transportation, cost of doing business is higher here because we've got a military base, international airport, a mountain range going down the middle of the city. We have all sorts of geographic impediments to getting around efficiently. So whenever gasoline prices go down because supply increases, that's a good thing. However, when gasoline prices decline as a consequence of demand shocks, that's a negative thing. And the most recent time we observed this was during, Great Recession of 2008-2009. Gasoline prices declined substantially, but unemployment was up. There was a lot of household economic stress, and business bankruptcies increased as well. And so nobody was really happy about this. Well, fast forward to 2020. Nobody's really pleased about gasoline prices being as low as they are because it's from a demand shock. And whenever there's demand shock, that always raises household and business bankruptcies, and it reduces commercial and industrial activity. And that's exactly what we've been observing. Just to put it in historical context, at this point, gasoline prices have declined in El Paso to their lowest levels since 2003. And 2003, we were still emerging from the dot-com recession. And it was coupled with increased oil supplies as well. So in real terms, we're down to the levels that were observed back in 2003. Then we were recovering from a recession. Now we're just on, the initial phases of entering into a recession.
We are visiting with Professor Tom Fullerton. Dr. Fullerton is a professor of finance and economics here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Now, according to an article in the Texas Tribune, they quote Representative Rafael Anchia from Dallas. He's the chairman of the Texas House Committee on International Relations and Economic Development, said about 1 million jobs in the Texas economy are dependent on international trade. And as far as that international trade, John Barella, the CEO of the Borderplex Alliance, says that the reason all this is happening, too, is because people in China are not requesting as much gas because, as you mentioned, the demand is really not there. And so that is what's forcing some of those prices to come down.
Yeah, it's not just the United States and China. It's everywhere. I can't think of a single national economy that is expanding here at this moment. And so the demand for energy is very low. And, you know, it's causing supplies to build up. Whenever there are excess supplies and those inventories build up, prices tend to go down.
The Mexico, according to this report also, is the United States' largest trading partner with more than $614 billion in two-way trade passing between the two countries. And they say that the ports of Laredo and El Paso saw $227.4 billion and $76.8 billion of that commerce, respectively, making them the country's largest, most busiest ports.
That's true. And it's interesting. The most recent numbers available from U.S. Customs and Border Protection show, not surprisingly, that, pedestrian crossings into El Paso and small vehicle crossings into El Paso have declined. What caught a lot of people by surprise is how much cargo vehicle traffic has also declined coming from Juarez into El Paso. In the case of automobiles and pedestrians, that's due to the border closure. But in the case of cargo traffic, you know, that's essential traffic, and it has not been closed down. What's happened there is that industrial activity in the United States has been decimated by the coronavirus recession. And as a consequence of that, it has filtered over and impacted on manufacturing in Ciudad Juarez as well as warehousing activity here in El Paso. And so, the recession has materialized so quickly that it has brought down almost immediately, the volume of 18-wheeler traffic coming across those bridges. And it's not just the bridges. It extends west into New Mexico. It's the same thing is being observed at the Santa Teresa port of entry and at the Columbus port of entry.
A lot of companies here in the United States have twin plants in Juarez, and they rely on those plants, those workers, to provide much necessary parts to whatever they may be manufacturing. And people might wonder, how has the COVID-19 affected that? Have some of those maquiladoras or all of them shut down or reduced their workforce drastically?
A lot of maquiladoras have done that, especially in those that produce transportation equipment, because the automobile industry in the United States has really taken it on the chin. And that's filtered over in terms of all of the parts manufacturing companies in Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua City. let's see, there is, however, a category where Maquiladora output, or IMEX output as is now called, where IMEX output is actually expanded, and that is anything that's related to healthcare and medical supplies. And so a lot of healthcare equipment and a lot of medical supplies are produced in northern Mexico, and the demand for those products has increased, substantially, especially those that manufacture, the face coverings and, also the surgical gloves, things like that, that protect healthcare workers. And so they've seen, increases in their sales volumes, and they're running three shifts, just as if the business cycle was running on all six cylinders.
People in the El Paso, Juarez area, or nationwide perhaps, when they turn on the radio or watch television, they used to be able to hear today's weather, what it's going to be like. They still hear that, but right at the top of the news, they'll say this many confirmed cases in El Paso, this many in Juarez, these many deaths in Juarez, this many deaths in El Paso. And in the BorderPlex report that you send us, you outlined here USA COVID-19 deaths. It's incredible comparing them to 1955 through 75 and then the Spanish flu. If you wouldn't mind kind of going over that with us.
Sure. We've just crossed the 100,000 mark within the last 48 hours in terms of the number of fatalities here in the United States. We are headed towards more than double the number of deaths associated with the Vietnam War. Of course, U.S. military involvement in Vietnam, you and I can remember this. Other people can't. But if they'll read the history books or get on Wikipedia, what they'll find is that U.S. military involvement in Vietnam extended from 1955 all the way to 1975. And all the soldiers that were killed then, that was big news back then. But you add it up over that entire 21-year period, and it's about 50% of what the fatalities have been over the course of the last 4 months here in the United States. Just an incredible, rate of fatality. That shows why Dr. Fauci and so many other healthcare professionals have been pointing out that this is a very dangerous disease, and we have to treat it carefully. Now, to put it into context, even though there have been some policy missteps out of Washington, D.C., and other regions of the country as a whole is doing much better than what it did during the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918. At that point, there were 105 million Americans residing in the United States. And over that 1.5 year period between 1918 and 1919, although there were a few deaths in 1920, there were approximately 675,000 people that succumbed to the Spanish flu. The fatality rate, the mortality rate, was much higher during that pandemic than it is during the current pandemic. So this is worse than the Vietnam War, but it's not nearly as bad as the problems were back in 1918.
We're visiting with Dr. Tom Fullerton. Dr. Fullerton is a professor of finance and economics here at the University of Texas at El Paso. We're talking a little bit about COVID-19 and some of the effects that it's had on our country and our area. Economically and with other situations as well. Now, we talked a little bit about the beginning about people going out and purchasing things out of fear and out of perhaps not knowing how long they're going to be staying at home. Tell us a little bit about how this COVID-19 has affected retail and some of the food sales.
Well, total food and retail sales in the United States have declined precipitously. Because people are not going out and doing the things that they normally would. And the only type of expenditures getting made, at least during the initial weeks of the shelter-in-place orders, were those related to sort of survival mode type of purchases. So all sorts of other things, went down. Probably the two sectors that were impacted most severely were, movie theaters and, vacation travel in general. And in terms of travel, it's estimated that more than 50% of all the workers in the travel industry have either been laid off, furloughed, or had their contracts terminated. This stretches across the entire country. It's not just retail and travel-related businesses. Almost every sector of the economy has been impacted by this. Hospitals have been laying off people. Doctors' offices and clinics have been laying off people because a lot of important, healthcare measures that people would normally engage in are being, sidelined because of fear of getting infected with this very severe coronavirus. So it's had an enormous impact on the economy throughout the hemisphere, throughout the world. Here regionally, I think there's three measures that can really help highlight how severe the economic impacts of the COVID-19 outbreak are. One is that, the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas Metropolitan Business Cycle Index for El Paso took its biggest single decline in its entire history in April. University of Texas El Paso Border Region Modeling Project maintains a household economic stress index. It took its biggest single monthly increase in April 2020. Those two things usually are inversely correlated with each other, and it's definitely been the case, this during this past month. Beyond that, unemployment here in El Paso has increased all the way to 14.8%. If you think back in February, it was down below 4%. And so, the labor market in El Paso has unraveled more rapidly than any period in economic history, at least recorded economic history. There's a chance that maybe in the 1930s or maybe 1929, there were months that resembled this, but regional labor market data were not published back then.
You mentioned earlier about people who make and sell cars are probably being hit pretty hard. And some people are wondering, who's going to go out and buy a car in the current situations that we are? And as you watch television, streaming, whatever you want, you'll see these commercials that these car dealers are offering you up to 4 years, 3 months of no interest, no payments. They'll deliver the car to you. And so tell us a little bit about how do you sell a car during these situations?
Well, the car dealerships, at least the new car dealerships, have proved to be very nimble in their responses, and they have taken advantage of all the electronic tools available to them to try to ensure that their sales are protected as much as possible. They're putting a floor under their sales decline to the extent possible. It's definitely a buyer's market. The only problem is it's a buyer's market because most buyers don't have the type of income sources that they previously had. So, it's a great time to buy a car if you can. Only problem is that most of us really can't buy a car at present. So those inventories are building up even though production has closed down. Now, from a regional perspective, it's important to remember that on Tuesday, automobile manufacturing is going to resume production. And so we're going to see an increase in the number of, automotive transportation equipment manufacturers and workers online in Ciudad Juarez, which means that we're going to see an increase in cargo vehicular traffic. We're going to see an increase in the capital-intensive related manufacturing that takes place here in El Paso that complements what goes on in Ciudad Juarez. And we're going to see an increase in warehouse activity as well. So we're going to see an uptick, and this decline in automotive manufacturing and automotive sales, it's temporary. And all those people that you alluded to earlier that are not buying automobiles, that demand has not gone away. That's what economists refer to as pent-up demand. At some point, that pent-up demand is going to unleash, and we're going to see a lot more sales activity at all of the car dealers throughout the city. But it wouldn't be surprising if a number of the used car dealerships end up going out of business.
Tell us a little bit about the stimulus checks that went out to people. Did that help stimulate the economy at all, or did some people save the money and put it away?
Well, anytime households receive transitory income, they are going to save a portion of it, or they'll use a portion of it to pay down existing debt levels as they should. And so, the stimulus money did help. And for a lot of households, it allowed them to do things like pay rent, pay utilities, buy food. And so, it was very, very essential for a large number of households, especially in areas like El Paso and Las Cruces, where poverty levels are substantially above the national average. That being said, you're correct. A lot of people saved that money and invested that money. And that's a normal reaction because they know that that's a one-time occurrence. You know, there's been probably four stimulus payments of this nature, you know, during the current century. And let's see, it's not clear that there's going to be another one next month or the month after that. So, you know, people reacted rationally to this unexpected income that arrived.
Speaking about saving, did some people, or do you know if some people invested this money in buying precious metals instead of not wanting to put it in the bank or do something else?
I don't think very many people invested in precious metals out of their stimulus checks. I can't rule it out, but I suspect that most people receiving those stimulus checks, were not investing in the commodity markets.
We're talking a little bit about the fact that how important it is for, you know, everybody, of course, people who have jobs. But here in El Paso and at UTEP, we have a lot of students both from Juarez and here who work, and that money that they're provided through from their jobs pays for their education. So with so many positions being eliminated or furloughed, how is that going to affect our student population, or is that something that you all haven't looked at?
University enrollments are likely to decline next fall to the extent that students cannot afford their tuition. However, that decline in enrollments may be more muted than people anticipate, because whenever unemployment goes up, it tends to increase university and technical school enrollments because people say, wow, it's hard to get a job now. I better at least go acquire some new skills that will make me more marketable. So the overall net impact on university and other post-secondary enrollments, it's not clear at this point. In terms of universities that are going to be impacted, probably the ones that are in, you know, residential campus, university town settings are going to be impacted more than, say, urban universities. So in our region, New Mexico State enrollments are probably more at risk than UTEP enrollments. Anytime students have difficulties in, saving up those tuition payments, it puts enrollment overall at risk.
Tom, as we're wrapping up here, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us the link that you sent me, tell us and explain to our listeners what they can find there.
Border Region Modeling Project earlier this week put out a Borderplex, pandemic monitor. We did this, in response to requests from Lone Star Title. They helped underwrite it, and so we put that together to help inform people. And it can be downloaded for free from the UTEP Library. It's on the digital measures section of the UTEP Library, specifically under the ScholarWorks section. But just go to Digital Commons. It's on the digital that report has been posted on the Digital Commons of the UTEP Library and can be downloaded for free. And it has a lot of things on there. One of the things it has on there that we haven't discussed yet is we ran a model simulation of what's going on if we get the proverbial V-shaped recovery. In other words, all that pent-up demand kicks in to gear during the third quarter, and the economy responds very vigorously and recovers quickly from the pandemic downturn. And even under a rapid recovery scenario, El Paso is likely to lose $1.1 billion in overall economic activity, at least as it's measured by total personal income. Again, that's from a starting point of $29.1 billion. So it's substantial. It's not a disaster, but it is a substantial loss of income. To put it in perspective, all the recessions that have occurred in recent decades, this will be the first recession since 1975. It's going back 4.5 decades to the OPEC One oil shock recession that began during the fourth quarter of 1973. This will be the first time since 1975 that aggregate personal income declines in both real and nominal, on a real basis and a nominal basis here in El Paso. Hadn't occurred in 4.5 decades, And that helps underscore how severe this pandemic is impacting the overall regional economy.
Dr. Fullerton, thank you so much for being with us. We've been visiting with Dr. Tom Fullerton. Dr. Fullerton is a professor of finance and economics here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Again, Tom, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Louis. Glad to participate.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Sam Cassiano. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Louis Sines. Thanks, Sam.
Is there any way we can do some magic?
Yeah, they're going to cut it that. That's the